Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to the Life Hacker Podcast for August 13th?
August 13th.
We are here with each other. I'm Adam Dachis.
I'm Whitson Gordon.
And we've got Alan. Alan, is that you, Alan?
That is me.
Awesome. So we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. But first, before we get into it, we should probably mention that we are doing this as an audio-only podcast, and we're going to be going forward in that regard. So those of you who have been watching the video, sorry you don't get to look at our interesting faces. But we will be doing more video content in the future that will be specific for the video channel, so look forward to that. In the meantime,
and if you're on iTunes, you can stay subscribed to those feeds, and hopefully we'll have other videos, other tip videos up on that feed soon. But for right now, this is our podcast. We can practice our lulling radio voices.
Exactly.
Yeah. That was really creepy. Okay, let's do the news.
All right, so what do we got up for the first story?
All right, the first story is, the biggest story of the week, is obviously the big hack on Matt Honan, editor of Wired, and a former writer over at our sister site, Gizmodo. This was a big hack not just because it was a prominent tech writer, but because there wasn't actually any hacking involved in the traditional sense. The guy got into Matt Honan's iCloud and Gmail account, remote wiped all of his computers. Matt didn't have any backups. It was a catastrophe. And the way he was able to do this was just by calling Apple and Amazon customer support with tiny bits of pretty public information, like the last four digits of his credit card, which he could find anywhere, and you know, his address, and reset Matt's passwords over the phone. So you can read more about what happened on the site.
Yeah, didn't he get his like tablets and iPhones all wiped out?
Everything was remote wiped. He didn't have any backups. He lost, you know, he lost a year and a half of emails and documents and you know, all of the photos of the first year and a half of his daughter's life. It was actually really
there are a lot of lessons to be learned here.
Yes. And so what I kind of wanted to do with this, we went over a lot of the things that you can do to protect yourself. Things we've covered a million times before, like having strong passwords, which in this case wouldn't have protected him because he got his password reset over the phone. But you know, not using the same password and account for different accounts, having a separate email account for your password resets, things like that. What I want to do is I want to go around and have all of us talk about, because this hits particularly close to home for all of us, because, you know, we're all tech bloggers, and Matt, you know, Matt used to work with us at our sister site. What we recommend these things all the time, you know, have strong passwords. We recommend good security practices, but at least I know for me, sometimes I'm a little bit more do as I say, not as I do. And I would like to know what kind of maybe security practices you guys used before this and what this may have inspired you to change. Because I know that it's definitely been kind of a kick in the face for me.
Well, Alan, why don't you go first? Because hopefully your answer is less embarrassing than mine.
I mean, I tend to do pretty well. You know, a while back I wrote that article about using a USB key with LastPass, and I've kind of been doing that ever since for my little kind of personal two-factor authentication setup. But that's all well and good, but if there's anything that this is convincing me to do, it's really make sure that my junk is backed up more frequently. I mean, I already back up regularly, but man, if somebody just remote wiped my machine, I would freak out, and that'd be pretty bad. So I think for me, the lesson is to make sure that I keep my data backed up. That's something I think that, you know, a lot of people may be overlooking out of the lessons from here, but yeah, that's a big one for me.
Well, and that's the one thing that shocks me most is that as a tech writer, I constantly tell people that they should be backing up, and I'm sure don't. That Matt's done the same. And I couldn't believe that he didn't have his stuff backed up. And I know there was a time when I told people to back up and didn't back up my machine, and if I were in that situation, I probably would have kicked myself a lot.
Well, before we get to me, what for people who don't know, what is two-factor authentication?
So two-factor authentication. So this is actually my one. So I'll say what I did. Okay. Is the big one for me is I'm going to go through LastPass and audit and update all of my passwords because they could be more secure than they are. Mm-hmm. But the big one for me was two-factor authentication. Two-factor authentication is a system that some sites like Google and Facebook have in place where it requires not just a password, but two things for you to log in. It requires your password, something you know, and it requires your phone, something you have. When you first log in on a new computer, it will text you a 6-digit PIN to your phone, and you then have to type that in as well. So if a hacker somehow found out your password, they would go to log in, it would ask them for a code, and they wouldn't be able to give it to them because they don't have your phone. So it's kind of a huge pain to do because you constantly have your phone nearby and typing in codes. But actually, about 2 days before this happened, I enabled two-factor authentication on all of my accounts just because I was having some weird suspicious... I was having some weird kind of suspicious Facebook activity and stuff like that. It was probably just because I was in Hawaii at the time and it was recognizing me as out of state. But I was just like, you know what? I'm tired of being paranoid. I'm going to enable two-factor authentication and everything. And now I'm really glad I did because that would have really helped Matt in this situation. And so that was the big one for me is security now trumps convenience for me.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm there quite there yet, even after this, which I'm afraid to say now in case someone is listening to this and is like, oh, an easy target. when Lifehacker was hacked and all the Gawker blogs were hacked way back in the day,
that was like 2 years ago.
It was at the beginning of all these big site hackings that we were one of the first ones. Woo!
We kicked it off.
Yeah.
We're trendsetters.
Yep. And so I started. I used to use the same password for everything, but it was the same. It was the same very secure password. But I also learned about how passphrases are more secure versus like instead of using a bunch of random numbers and letters with varying cases and whatever, you can use a phrase that's just like duck. Cloud golf club, and having those four words with the spaces in it makes it very hard to
much harder to hack.
Yeah, and so I've started changing passwords as I go along to phrases that I'll remember that are based on kind of where I'm signing in, but are also things that I would only know. So in terms of stronger passwords, I've been going that route. I've also always been. I think I'm probably less paranoid than most people because I go through a lot of trouble to back up things everywhere. Mm-hmm. I have probably 5 copies of everything that I care about in my own house and another 3 elsewhere. So my data's not going anywhere. it would be very hard to... I'm not worried about losing stuff. I'm not really worried about anyone finding out about anything personal because I don't think there's anything that I don't really post publicly that I would care about for the most part. So I'm not, getting hacked, I would get upset about the inconvenience. I don't want to have my identity stolen. Yeah. I'm more concerned about that because that's you can't really fix that. I try not to get about my social. But
in the end, Matt was really lucky because there were a lot, the hacker could have done much worse things to him. Mm-hmm. They could have gotten into his financial stuff, but they didn't. He had a lot of, contacts in his address book that are very prominent in the tech industry, and they could have used that and, messed with those people. And so he was actually really lucky when you look at what could have happened.
Yeah, that's the danger. That's the stuff that scares me more than the data.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agreed. After
his Twitter account, wasn't it? They just saw that he had a 3-letter Twitter account, and that's all they wanted?
Yep.
They just wanted his Twitter.
Oh, I was watching the Twitter thing as it went down. I was like, what the heck happened to Matt Honan's Twitter? There were some really, really weird comments coming from the Honan Twitter account.
I think people are generally pretty good at telling when someone's been hacked these days. This was not one of those situations, perhaps, because it was so specific. But I've been seeing people's Facebook accounts get hacked all the time and stuff popping up. And then the first comment on every post they make looks like you got hacked.
Oh, yeah. That stuff is easy. It's when they're silently rooting through your stuff that's the problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm definitely considering two-factor authentication now, and we have that great article from Matt Cutts we published a little bit after this happened that explains a lot of things that a lot of people believe about two-factor authentication that are not really the case. Like, if you don't, what happens if you don't have self-reception? Can you not log in? Well, you can get like special access codes to use.
Yep.
You get like 10 of them and you can set those up, and there are a lot of myths about two-factor authentication.
It's not as bad as it seems at first. It's just kind of inconvenient. So go check all of those out. If you like, seriously, guys, if you haven't really taken our security advice to heart yet, now's the time.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say. Better safe than sorry. All right, moving on. Alan, you had a cool story about searching Gmail and the web at the same time.
Yeah, it's just a field test right now, but Google's working on rolling in email search with your Google search. So you go to google.com and search for whatever it is that you're interested in. And if there are relevant results in your Gmail account, it will display those in the corner right up there right now where their like research knowledge graph stuff is. So like if you go search for biking in Tahoe, which is the example that Google used, you'll see your Gmail results. So if somebody said, hey, why don't we go biking in Tahoe at some point, there'll be that email right up there as well, and you can click on it and go straight to your inbox. It's kind of cool, especially for people like me who used to use Google Desktop all the time back before Google decommissioned it, because that used to search your email and the web and all your files and all this other stuff. So it's kind of neat, but a lot of people are concerned about it because they're worried that, oh, it's all on the web at google.com, so that must mean that my email is insecure and Google's got their nose in it and all this other stuff. And it's not like it's not being indexed anyway, so that's one of those tempest in a teapot kind of things.
That's a good point.
Yeah, well, I think like the only concern I might have if I were searching the web for something, I don't know, that I wouldn't want people to see, or maybe if you're searching for the web for something kind of private, you leave the search up on the computer and then all these emails come up, or
it's just creepy.
Yeah, I would worry maybe about someone seeing my search history or using my computer and then seeing my emails pop up. It's like if you're sharing a computer, I think there's some concern with that.
That makes a lot of sense.
Other than that, I think it's really cool, and I would definitely put it on my laptop, which no one touches. But I have like the other computers in the house are kind of community computers. So
I was looking for your laptop to touch it.
Oh,
well, sorry.
That's why it's across the room, so you can't get to it.
I was just trying to piss Dotchess off during the podcast. Okay, sorry.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, well, that's pretty cool.
Speaking of getting pissed off.
Speaking of getting pissed off, Dodges has a really great rant about Craigslist.
I'm not going to get into it too much here, but...
Because he'll just get red and angry and that vein in his forehead. It's really sad we chose this to not do video.
Yeah.
Or we could zoom in on the angry veins.
Yeah. We'll make a special YouTube video for this. But Craigslist is being a bunch of jerks lately. They sued a site called Padmapper, which helps you find apartments online, and it uses Craigslist listings as well as other listings around the web, including their own. to basically map where apartments are available on the internet, or near you, I guess would be probably a better way to say that. You basically say, I want apartments in the zip code of my choice, and it will show you apartments in the area, and then you can click on them, and you can, you know, say, I want a one-bedroom or a five-bedroom or whatever. It's a much better way to find apartments because you can do it visually, and you can go through them really quickly, as opposed to Craigslist search, which is really bad and hard to find things with, and is basically from 1994, like the entire site. And so a lot of third-party developers have realized that Craigslist is kind of outdated, and so they've made new interfaces for various things that will help people find things better. And most of these sites are directing traffic right back to Craigslist. You have to go back, it sends you right over to Craigslist site if you want to actually view the post. So that's all, like, they're doing the best that they can, but Craigslist has decided to crack down and say, no, we're sending cease and desist orders to a bunch of companies. I found out it's not just Padmapper. A lot, after I wrote this rant, a lot of people are saying no to, I mean, they're saying no to a lot of different companies, especially as they're growing.
And for no reason. Because these sites are all directing right back to Craigslist. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yep.
It's completely ridiculous. And now they're suing Padmapper because Padmap and 3Taps, one of the legal data providers of Craigslist, because they're for copyright infringement, which is a little crazy because they're just indexing it like a search engine. And Craigslist has really had nothing to say about this. The only thing they've done is decide to take their users and use them as ammunition against these sites. And so now when you post on Craigslist, Craigslist owns the copyright for everything you post on there, so you can't post your ad anywhere else. And if anyone else is aggregating that content in any way, then they're breaking copyright. So they put that in there to now make it even, you know, to make their case stronger. And so they're using us, the users, to fight this battle for them without our consent. Although our consent, I suppose, is, you know, posting on Craigslist. But a lot of people are missing this. They've been really bad about this. It's a really poor approach to the problem when they could really work with these third-party developers and find ways to make everything work for everybody. And so the users win, Craigslist wins, and the third-party developers win. But they're not doing that. Hopefully they will come to the table with everybody. This is what the developers I've spoken with have said, that they want to have these discussions with Craigslist, and it's just they're just kind of getting shut down.
Basically, Craigslist is a jerk.
Yes. So Craigslist.
They actually told like Google and I think it was Microsoft that, or it might have been Yahoo, like yesterday. They just said, "Hey, you guys, stop indexing. Like, we're sending you a cease and desist.
Oh,
stop
good
indexing
Lord.
Posts
wow.
to Craigslist." So those other services like 3Taps can't index. I mean, it's just getting out of hand.
It's sad because it's literally going to make less people use Craigslist if they don't see those in Google results. Or if I can't find an apartment on Padmapper, I'm certainly not going to search on Craigslist. I'm going to search on other apartments.
The last apartment I found it on Padmapper.
Me too.
The apartment I'm currently in, I found it on Padmapper. Then when Padmapper went down for a week because they took off Craigslist ratings or listings, I tried to find it again on Craigslist and couldn't. I knew the address and it didn't show up. So then I got the apartment because Padmapper put the stuff back. So that's anecdotal, but it's an example of, I mean, you'll be hard pressed to find anyone who has used Padmapper and thinks this is not a big problem.
Yeah.
So it's sad, and hopefully Craigslist will stop being a jerk about it.
Speaking of people stopping being jerks, Alan, the Verizon FCC decision.
Well, it's not like Verizon
really good transition
being a jerk. At least the FCC kind of forced them to stop being a jerk a little bit, to the tune of $1.2 or $1.3 million. About 10 months ago, the FCC launched an investigation into Verizon because they had been they got a complaint from a consumer group called Free Press that they were stopping people from tethering their mobile phones to whatever other devices they have in their home, like their laptop or their iPad or whatever. And a lot of us knew this already because if you had a Verizon phone and you went to, you know, Google Play and searched for PDA Net or wireless tether or whatever, you'd find a kind of strange lack of apps. I mean, you can go to the website and see that those apps are there, but it would say that they're not available for your carrier. So after 10 months in this long investigation, Verizon agreed to say, well, we didn't do anything wrong, but they're going to pay $1 million anyway, and they're prohibited from blocking tethering apps. And the kind of end result there is that if you have a Verizon phone, you can tether your phone for free. The trick is, as long as you don't go over your data cap, you'll be okay. But yeah, the reason for that is because Verizon bought the spectrum for their 4G network from the government. And part of that purchase was this rule called the Open Access Rule, saying that Verizon can't infringe on the way you use that device once you've purchased it and you're paying a customer. So at the end of the day, there's some complications in the post, you know, depending on what kind of customer you are. But ultimately, Verizon and some other carriers now are slowly starting to roll in the cost of tethering into the base prices of their data plans. So we're starting to see that change from tethering being this thing that carriers are going to charge you extra for to something that's just built into your data plan like everywhere else in the
world. It's a pretty big step. That's kind of nice that now we don't have to sideload tethering apps. We can just download whatever we want, or just, you know, if you're on a certain plan, tether through your phone without having to pay extra for it. That's really nice, because the tethering plans before were insane.
Yeah, they're very... Yeah, and I mean, the downside, I think, to this, I guess, is for whoever here besides me in the room is on AT&T, but or I should say not AT&T, any other carrier than Verizon, because we still have, they're still allowed to do it, to force you to pay extra for tethering apps. But it's, I'm hoping this creates some sort of competition.
Yes, agreed. The other problem is you and I are actually both on the iPhone, mm-hmm. so it doesn't mean jack for us, because the App Store isn't governed by Verizon or AT&T. It's governed by Apple, and they are allowed to block whatever they want from the App Store. So they're going to keep blocking tethering.
Well, maybe.
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah.
I
would hope that they say, no, we want to be on the consumer side here.
Yeah, that's
true. I mean, they've got enough power to do it.
They do, but At least this is a step in the right direction.
Yes.
So we'll be keeping a close eye on this. Mm-hmm. All right. Alan, you also... God, Alan had a lot of great posts this week. You had another really good one on staying productive when you're expected to always be available. Can you just briefly talk about what that is?
Sure. My last job, I was that kind of guy where, like, I was the quick draw email dude. So somebody sent me an email and I got back to them in, like, 5 seconds. And... But that was the thing. I mean, that was the way our corporate culture was. And I think a lot of people are like that. We write a lot about how you should just check your email twice a day and, you know, don't let yourself get distracted by it and all this other stuff. But for a lot of people, distractions are their job. Like, they have to be on top of their inbox, or they have to look at Twitter, or they can't ignore their phone ringing just because they're knee deep in whatever they're working on. So I wrote this whole bunch of tips, honestly, about how you can stay productive when you're expected to be always available by whatever, you know, whether your boss or your company or whatever. And a lot of it involves just kind of finding that great line between I have enough time to actually get work done, between the times I have to check all this stuff that's going to be bothering me anyway. So that's pretty much the bulk of it, whether it's your email or your phone. You know, a couple of, you know, tricks like keeping your phone visible but on silent. They're just ways to stay in the zone when you're working, but you don't have to jump like a trained dog every time your email client goes ping. You know, you can check that every half hour and still have that same level of control, but still get a lot of work done in that half hour.
That's good. I'm totally that guy now. I respond to email and Twitter and stuff within seconds, and people are always like, "Whoa, are you just always at your computer?" And I'm like, "Yeah, basically."
I'm the opposite of that. I used to do that at one of my former jobs, and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. This is very frustrating for me. So I went the opposite direction. I basically check my email maybe 3 times a day. I kind of peek at it, but I don't actually get into it more often than that. And then go on Twitter and Facebook a couple of times to respond to stuff there. But I can't be the pinging drives me crazy. My phone's on silent.
Yeah. The flip side is that if you are that guy, right? I mean, if I know what that's like. If you are that guy who is checking their email at 1 a.m. because you just want to get it out of the way before you go to bed, everybody starts to expect that from you. So you're not a hero anymore. That's just normal. And that sucks, because the one time you don't do it and miss something important, now you've done something wrong. And that's not
everyone's
cool.
Everyone's like, where were you?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. How dare you sleep at 2 a.m.?
Yeah, I definitely had that problem. I got woken up. I realized this was an issue when I got woken up one night for a systems emergency, and after the whole problem was resolved at like 1 or 2 a.m. the next day, like, I got a big thank you from the team and from my manager. And when I got really offended by that because I don't want, I was like, why, you should be thanking me for, you know, putting myself in an, I'm like, I had no responsibility to do that. And it just sort of happened. And I didn't want to be thanked for, you know, kind of putting myself in a bad situation. And I mean, they weren't doing anything wrong. I mean, it was a nice gesture, I suppose.
It was just a wake up call to you.
But it was a wake up call. Like, whoa, I got to stop doing this and setting these sorts of expectations because they're counting on me to be like this now, and I don't want to be like that.
Yeah. Well, if you don't want to be like that, Alan has one last post about napping.
Yeah. If you don't want to be like that, you need to take naps. But I guess the big thing, I mean, I'm guilty of this sometimes too. I love a good nap, but you know, not everybody, again, has the opportunity to take them. But if you need a way to convince your boss to let you take naps, I posted this really great video from the folks at ASAP Science about the science behind why power naps actually work. And it really has to do with the sleep cycles that your body goes through. When you're sleeping at night, there are four cycles. The third and fourth are usually those times when you're in really deep REM sleep and you don't want to wake up. And if somebody wakes you up, you're like, no, five more minutes. Those are the cycles you don't want to get to when you're taking a power nap. The first two cycles usually about a half an hour. The first one is, you know, if you fall asleep and somebody wakes you up, you wouldn't even know you were sleeping. And the second one is that time when your brain starts to shut down and consolidate memory. All told, from the time you start to fall asleep to about a half an hour, you're in that second stage. And if you wake up after that second stage, then all these studies that are actually linked at the video show that you'll be more productive, you'll be more creative, you'll be more motivated. So that's the real, that's the power nap. And if you're that kind of person who's like, well, if I take naps and I wake up and I feel groggy, you're blowing past that phase two and you're going into phase three. It's just a matter of pulling it back. So it's a really cool video about, you know, if you need to convince somebody that naps are okay, or if you just want justification to go out to your car, like in the office parking lot, and take a half hour nap when no one's looking.
I'm just, the one thing that I always wonder about this, and this may be a problem that me and few people have, but in terms of power napping, it's the time that it takes to fall asleep that I have more of an issue with. Like, I'm all for taking a half an hour nap, but then you got to factor in like how long it takes you to fall asleep. They didn't happen to have any tips in there about how to fall asleep fast.
No, not really. It's just a matter of kind of go with the flow, right? So, I mean, if it takes you 5 minutes to fall asleep, then try and account for it. If it takes you 15 minutes to fall asleep, then and you only have a half hour break, don't fight it and just come back after 15 minutes.
Okay.
Cool.
That's fair.
All right. Well, that was a lot of news, but it was big news week. So let's move on and do some questions.
Cool. Well, our first question comes from a reader, Maxwell, and he writes, "Hi, Lifehacker. Is there any way for me to start torrents on my MacBook whilst I'm away from it using my iPhone?"
Yes, there is. There are actually a number of things you can do. We've featured a bunch of these on the site, and we'll put some links in the show notes. One of my favorite methods is using Dropbox. Your most torrent clients have a watch folder feature where it'll watch a specific folder on your hard drive, and if it detects any torrents there, it will automatically start them. So you just need to leave your computer on at home, and then drop a torrent, you know, set that to watch one, you know, a folder in your Dropbox. And then when you're on your iPhone, you find a torrent you like, you can download it, upload it to your Dropbox with the Dropbox app, and then, you know, transmission or whatever will automatically start downloading it. It's very cool. You can also use, you know, you can access the transmission or uTorrent web interface from your smartphone, and you can start torrents from there too, which is really nice. And we've done articles on how to do that too. So yeah, you have a lot of choices. It should be pretty easy.
Cool.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What's next?
All right, next we have a caller.
Hey, Lifehacker. I'm trying to decide where I should keep track of all my passwords for all my different usernames on all different accounts, and I was wondering where you guys kept track of them. Thanks, I love the show. Bye.
All right, so where do we keep... I know... I'll just say that I know we recommend LastPass all the time on the site. Does anyone not use LastPass out of the three of us?
I use it. Alan?
I use LastPass. Yeah, I used to use KeePass, and it's pretty good too.
Tell us about KeePass.
I mean, it's mostly desktop-based, and it's free open-source software that does the same thing LastPass does. It just doesn't keep your passwords in the cloud. It keeps them in an encrypted file locally. So a lot of people I know use KeePass plus Dropbox. So they'll drop their encrypted password file into Dropbox so they can access it on any computer that they have KeePass on. And it's completely free as opposed to LastPass's Pro account, which is only like $12 a month anyway.
Yeah, I don't even
$12
use
a year.
So. I don't even use LastPass Pro. I just use the regular LastPass. It's everything I need.
Well, what's nice about LastPass has been really quick on iterating with the security features in the last couple of weeks based on what's happened recently in the news. They've started allowing for additional restrictions on how you can how you can lock down your account so you don't have to worry about hackers as much. They don't allow logins from Tor, the anonymous browsing service, and they also are restricting logins by country. So if you're only in the United States and you know you're not going to access your account from outside the United States, then you can just say that's the only place that I can log in, and you can change that if you're traveling, of course. But they also have restricted mobile access, and you can have a dedicated security address for resetting your passwords. So that's really all those things are really nice. You don't have to enable all of them, but there's security features that really you don't have to think about that can just reduce your risk of getting hacked. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're all about LastPass here, especially with
it's
all
that. It's just really well put together.
It is.
And yeah, it is. It really is.
And they had a security breach kind of at one point, like last year, was it?
Yep. And it wasn't. I don't know if it was ever confirmed as a breach. They just detected an anomaly, and they were really good about notifying their users. You know, the day it happened, they're like, everyone, change your master password. We don't think anything's really happened, but we just want to be safe.
Yeah, they did not mess around. They were. I mean, that's. They had the best response you could expect from any company, especially a security company.
Yeah.
So they have such a good history as well as a great product, so it's really worth looking at.
Yeah. All right, cool. Our last question actually came to me on Facebook, and I answered it there, but I just thought it would be relevant to the show and anyone else doing this because it's not something we've talked about in a while. It's kind of a long question, so I'll basically summarize it. The question asker asked about dual booting Ubuntu and Windows on the same machine. And we talked a lot about triple booting on the site with OS X, which kind of means you're using a Hackintosh and it's a lot more involved. And the question was basically, when I install Linux, what happens to my Windows bootloader? All of these articles you've written say that it destroys the bootloader and I have to do all this random stuff to get it back and working, and I don't have a Windows CD here to do that. What do I need to do? And the answer is it's actually much simpler. If you're just dual booting Linux and Windows, all you need to do is install Windows first and install Linux second. Linux will install Grub, which will give you a boot menu that will let you choose between Windows and Linux. And that will kind of overwrite Windows' bootloader that likes to take over the whole computer. It's super simple, does everything for you. If you're trying to do anything else, you're probably making it too hard on yourself. Because as soon as you install Linux, it does it all automatically. So that's pretty much all you need to know. If something did go wrong and you couldn't boot into Windows, you would need your Windows installation CD, but you could just insert it, choose to repair your computer, and it should be able to repair the bootloader fine.
Cool.
Yep.
All right, well, so that's all for questions.
That is all for questions.
Let's get to some downloads. All right, first up, we have an app for iOS and Windows. It's called Clips. It's actually a jailbreak hack for your iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch. And what it does is it's kind of a clipboard manager, but it also syncs all the data that's on your clipboard with your computer. So and it does this through Dropbox. And so basically, you install the jailbreak hack on your iPhone or whatever iDevices you want. You copy or paste something, and it brings up a little panel. And then you can just say save it to Clips instead of copy. And then Clips will save it in the clipboard manager, and you have access to settings there. You can click the settings button, and it will let you sign into Dropbox, and it will start syncing all its information with Dropbox. That way, when you sign in to Clips on any of your other iDevices, you can access all that clipboard history, so everything's in sync, which is pretty cool. On top of that, if you have a Windows machine, it has an app that will that will tie into this information that's being synced in your Dropbox as well. Unfortunately, Mac users and Linux users don't have an option here because the app is only for Windows, but if you are syncing images or whatever, those will show up in your Dropbox, and technically you can use them, but they're saving all the data as XML. So it's not really like a usable thing if you're on Mac or Linux. That said, Windows users and iPhone users, you've got a pretty cool jailbreak solution for syncing your data between all your devices without any thought whatsoever. Alan, what happened with Candy Bar this week?
Yeah, Candy Bar is a really cool application to customize the icons on your Mac and the appearance of the dock. So if you see any of our featured desktops, you see that a lot of people use Candy Bar to make their docks transparent or kind of look like they're floating and things like that. So the app's been updated for Mountain Lion, but Panic, the developer behind it, has actually decided to make it completely free. It used to be $30, and mostly because they're not sure whether or not Apple's increasing security around OS X is going to allow them to keep working on the app. Because right now, even in Mountain Lion, you can't change the dock background and you can't change icons for Finder apps and apps you've downloaded from the Mac App Store because they're secure. Mm-hmm. But everything else works, and if you don't have Mountain Lion, like you're still on Snow Leopard or something, you get all of the app's features completely free. So it's worth a look even if you're on Mountain Lion. It's a really cool way to kind of add some personal flair to your desktop.
Cool.
It's very nice.
What have we got for Android?
Yep, and over on Android, White Pages, the folks that used to bring you those big books on your doorstep, or still do, I guess, they have released an app called Current Caller ID, which... when somebody calls you, it displays way more information about them than you probably really need. Like, it shows you their latest Facebook post and their latest tweet and their location, even weather where they are. But it sounds like it's over the top, but it's really cool if somebody's, like, moving house and they post it to Facebook saying, hey, I'm moving today, and then you just happen to get a call from them at 8 a.m. that morning. You kind of know what you're in for if you answer the phone. Aside from what they show you, it also... displays how you guys talk to each other and how you interact. So if you and the person text message more than call, then it'll suggest that you text message that person. It'll even show you when to text message or call that person when you're more likely to get a response based on your previous communications. So it's really cool that way. And it also helps weed out telemarketers because it uses White Pages as directory.
Oh, that's nice.
Of phone numbers.
That's really nice.
That is great.
Yeah.
How about iOS?
And iPhone users get a little privacy tool too. Burner is an app for iPhone only, unfortunately, but it generates disposable throwaway phone numbers and hides your communications behind it. So if you're meeting somebody that you met on Craigslist because you're going to sell them something, or you are out on a date with somebody you met at, like, Match.com or whatever, and you don't want them to have your real phone number just for privacy's sake, you can generate a burner number, and then all your text messages and all of your phone calls will go through that number. And if they call you, you can either choose to accept the call or you can have it routed to an anonymous voicemail. You can monitor how often they text you and things. You can see all that stuff happening. And then whenever you're done with that number, you can just burn it. You can just get rid of it. It's a $2 download, and then you have to kind of charge the app and keep it charged with credits that you buy in-app to keep creating new burner numbers or lengthen the life of existing burner numbers. But it's really handy if you've ever wanted to get in touch with somebody but didn't want them to have your phone number.
You know, that would be great feature for Craigslist if they worked with third-party developers.
Then but they don't.
Yeah, because then you could have a phone number, but...
dissed Craigslist.
Too bad. All right, we got one more, right?
Yeah, well, so our last download is actually a giant pack of downloads. So, you guys, if you're on the site, you've probably seen our yearly Life Hacker Pack, where we list all of our favorite downloads for Windows, Mac, Linux, iPhone, Android. Well, Thorin Klosowski this week did the Life Hacker Pack for students. Since everyone is kind of going back to school now, a lot of people are starting college. We've got a whole pack of downloads that will help you get things done at school, organize your homework assignments on your computer and your phone, ebook readers so you don't have to lug around all your textbooks, even things down to Skype for video chatting with all your friends that are at different colleges. We even have on iPhone and Android apps for discovering cheap food and cheap drinks, happy hours and stuff like that. So
that's what I did
for all those high school drinkers out there too.
Yeah. So if you're going off to school this year, definitely check out the Life Hacker Pack for Students. There are a lot of great apps there that will hopefully help you stay organized and give you more time to, you know, go out and party. Because you'll be done with your homework.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Well, that's all we've got for this week, right?
It is all we've got for this week.
We will see you all next week.
Thanks for tuning into our audio-only podcast.
Keep listening and watch our YouTube channel for new stuff.
Yep. Take it easy, guys.
See ya.
Bye.
If you'd like to ask us a question, send an email to tips+asklhshow@lifehacker.com. Or give us a call at 347-687-8109. Keep your questions as short as you can so we can keep the show moving right along. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.